We've been talking about the sun, the Shemesh, the sun, the faithful Shamash assistant says, Shemesh Yoreach Omad Zevulo, the sun and the moon stood still in their home. Le'orchet Sechu, they travel by the light of your arrows. Le'noiga Barak Chanisecha, by the flash of the lightning of your spear. And we explain that Hashem, so to speak, says the Medrash, fires its arrows because the sun is reluctant to rise because of people who would serve. Some amazing ideas we explored yesterday. But I was looking more into what is the nature of this reluctance, and once the command has happened, where did this all start? And I found an amazing Gemara parallel. Actually, parallels in two places. In the Dorim, we see that there is a conflict between Moshe and Korach, and Ravah, or according to some, Rabbi Yitzchok said, "What is the meaning of the pasuk which we are discussing, that the sun and the moon stood still?" So this teaches us that the sun and the moon came from Rokia to Zavul. These are two levels of the heavens, and said, Ribbono Shel Olam, Hashem, Master of the Universe, if you do justice for the son of Amram, i.e., for Moshe, who incidentally is compared with the sun, in his dispute with Korach, then we will continue to illuminate the world. V'yim lav, if not, Einon HaMe'irim, we won't illuminate the world. Paralleled in Sanhedrin, where it's almost identical, where they say, if you perform justice for Moshe, the son of Amram, and prove his righteousness, we'll emerge and illuminate the world, and if not, we won't emerge. And then they didn't emerge. They stood still, as the pasuk suggested, until Hashem fired arrows at them and said to them, you didn't protest with regards to my honor, as people would see the sun and the moon each day and worship them, serve them as idols, but you protested for flesh and blood, for Moshe. And today, from then on, the sun and the moon don't emerge until they are struck by the arrows, which, as the Mefarshim explained, though, obviously we have to understand this on a number of levels. Don't just think of it as a literal thing, lahavdil elef alfei havdalos, as you might think you've seen in the various mythologies around which we've referred to in the past. Once that was done, though, then they would do it forever, every day now, struck by those arrows. Now, this concept of being attacked or shot at by arrows or spears, this violent act, apparently causes the sun and the moon to finally be at peace. Now, this isn't the only time in recently that we've discussed what looks like to be something violent, weapons being used, which actually creates peace. Just last week, we have Pinchas using a spear, just like it says, a spear, Roimach in that case. Interestingly enough, it occurred to me that Roimach, he spoke about 248 positive mitzvahs. The sun itself, which is hit by the Chanis, the sun is shines for 365, which actually corresponds to the negative commandments. Perhaps that also brooks further discussion, but not for now. But Pinchas is given Brisi Shalom, a covenant of peace, which is actually parallel to the idea that Hashem makes sure the sun and the moon shines every day. Chukos Shemayim Va'aretz Leisomti, these are the laws of nature by which they shine every single day. The continuation, a bris, an eternal covenant, one of shlemus, of peace, etc. But it looks like a weapon. It looks violent. And in fact, the people complained about Moshe's staff as well. It's always used to hit things. And eventually Hashem says, no, show them that it's used for other things as well. Because they complain, look, it was used to act against Korach. So in the end, he's asked to bring water forth with it. Whether it's Moshe's staff or Aaron's staff that's used, you can see that a matar, now a staff, doesn't have to just be used for violent means. It can be used for life-giving means, producing water, producing fruit. And it's fascinating to consider the name of the first of this week's twin sedras, Matos. Matos. Vayidaber Moshe al Roshei HaMatos. Hashem spoke to the chiefs of the tribes. So Matos suddenly means tribe, but it also means staff. Interesting enough, he's talking about the Roshei HaMatos, who are literally the chiefs of staff. So is it tribe? Is it staff? And also, if we're trying to move towards the whole nature of a group of all of us together, why this tribal exclusivity if we're meant to be a klal? It's also fascinating that it means tribe and staff. But think further. Until Bamidbar, the word mata was never used for tribe. In fact, the only word that's used for tribe outside of this, from now on, it's mata, but beforehand, it was shevet. Shevet means a tribe. But hang on a minute. Shevet also means a kind of stick. Mata is a tribe and a stick, or a staff and a tribe. And shevet means a tribe and a stick. What's the difference between the two? Well, it's interesting because a shevet really more accurately means a club. So that means it's a weapon. Whereas a mata, a staff, is more used in terms of support. Watch the incredible etymology, even in English, that the word mata and the word shevet both mean a stick and a group of people. But in terms of shevet, it's a weapon and club, which is exclusive. Whereas mata, which means a staff, which is there to support, staff normally means an inclusive team. And that's the massive difference between the two. You can be a member of a club, which is exclusive, cliquey, has its rules and wants to exclude except for those who are members of that. Or you can be part of a team, a tsevet. A tsevet, actually, I mean, it's a different word, but tsevet comes from the word mitzvah, which means to join, to the tzavar, or the neck, beis hamikdash, shamayim, and oretz, all these things we've spoken about. And now we begin to understand, yes, tribes are important, but if you look at it as factionalism, as in fact people did, that is why they celebrated Tuba of the 15th of Av through the centuries, because that was the day that they stopped the ban against marrying into other tribes as being something, a negative thing, as occurs a number of times in Tanakh. You understand that you can have your identity. We are all individuals, but we're individual within a klal. Not like communism, like we mentioned in passing with Korach. Not like Achashverosh, which we mentioned a long time ago, as opposed to Aaron. Aaron, who recognized the difference between people. And Achashverosh, who said, no, we're all the same, and ends up being a murdering megalomaniac. And interestingly enough, you begin to understand the genius of Paroi, who had his decree against the Zachorim, against the males. We said at the time, surely it would be much cleverer to destroy the women folk. It just needs one male. But no, he understood the nature of the males who had their tribal identities. If done in the right way, you have individuality within a klal, like in an army. You have the infantry, you have the cavalry. Each part, each tribe has its part to play. That is the amazing nature of individuality within the klal. Now, we said we're in the time of the 3 weeks. The 3 weeks followed the Egel Azor. What happened to the Egel Azor? We said that just had Vayichan Yisrael Neged Ahar as a unit, all together, becoming one nation. But then when they turned their back on it and they started serving the Egel, and we said Avodah Zorah, idol worship, is serving the self, self-interest, each man for himself. That is not individuality within a klal. That is each man for himself. We've spoken many times about the idea of a melech. When you're ruled by the right person, the melech is an individual who is there for the people. Once you realize that, you realize that the shemesh, the song that the sun sings, as the arrows and the spears have been shot at it, are telling you a message. Are telling you a message that you need to be your own person, but never lose sight of the fact that you are your own person within a klal, and you need to be following the rules of what that klal is going to say. That way, we will get our Beis HaMikdosh back as part of the clan.